Every society, it says, stands on different principles. So throughout the ages, different societies came and went, and all of them had different principles which they stood by. For example, in Srila Prabhupada's time, when he came to America, it was the swinging 60s. So you could say the four principles of the 60s were sex, drugs, rock and roll, and no authority. So those were the principles which guided people's lives at that time. And then after that, there were hippies, and there were, then other societies came and went. Nowadays we're in capitalist society, and maybe the four principles of capitalist society are land, power, money, and people, or control over people. So it's interesting, every society has its principles, but spiritual society also has its principles. So what are the four principles of spiritual society? What do you think?
Intoxication.
No intoxication? Yeah? Yeah, yeah, no, that's good. No intoxication. And what principle does the no intoxication ensure in society? The principle that no intoxication establishes is...
Truthfulness.
No, that's another one. Good try.
Purity.
Yeah. That's another one. Austerity. Yeah. Austerity is a very important part of society, because austerity means the ability to give up your immediate pleasure because you know there's something better in the long term. So intoxication is like that, annihilates that ability to do that, because intoxication is all about immediate pleasure. Then, okay, no intoxication, then what else do we follow? Or should we follow? Yeah.
No gambling.
No gambling, okay, so no gambling. And what principle does no gambling establish?
Truthfulness.
Truthfulness, yes, because, you know, as you gamble, then you develop greed and untruthfulness and that kind of thing. And then we have no illicit sex. So no illicit sex is said to establish cleanliness, because internal cleanliness, external cleanliness, when we refrain from trying to exploit the opposite gender, then we begin to be able to be free from the enjoying propensity or exploitation, and that means we have a certain purity. And the fourth and final one is chant 16 rounds as well. That's definitely a good principle. But yeah, no meat eating specifically. And what does that establish?
Compassion
or mercy. So actually it's said that there are four cosmic ages, isn't it? Just like in a year you have winter, spring, summer, and then autumn, right? In London, you have only one season, rain. But generally, there's four seasons. So in the same way, in the cosmic world, there are four seasons. The first one is Satya Yuga. The next one is
Treta
Yuga. The next one is Dwapar Yuga. And the next one is Kali. So it's actually said that one principle is basically being destroyed in every age of the four. So by the time you get to Kali Yuga, it's said that there's only one principle on which society is standing. Do you know which one it is?
Truthfulness.
Truthfulness. Anyone think anything else?
Chanting holy names.
Chanting the holy names, yeah. Yeah, true. But yeah, truthfulness is the one principle on which the society is still existing. Do you think we live in a truthful world? Do you trust the media? I'm glad. Do you trust politicians? Do you trust your own mind? So then this is puzzling, isn't it? In what sense can we say that society is still held aloft on truthfulness, when all of us look around at society and we say there's no truthfulness, I can't trust anyone. What do you think? What's the answer? Because scriptures, they say that the one principle remaining in Kali Yuga is truthfulness. My question to you, and until you answer this question, we can't move forward. My question to you is, why is there still truthfulness in society when we see so much untruth? Yes?
Yeah, basically, there is a truthfulness. For example, the boss trusts the employers that they will do their work, that they're coming in time. And if you agree with something in general, you can trust others.
Okay, you're saying there's still some truthfulness because there's trust. Okay. I can see you're a very positive thinker. Nice that you're optimistic. But still you haven't convinced me. Why truth? Because you may have trust, but you may have trust in the wrong thing. Why do the sages say that this age is still, there's truthfulness, there's something specific? Why this age still survives on truthfulness? Can anyone think?
Yes. Maybe it is, you know, the relationship with the Supreme Lord. So that means like they are truthful. That they know that there is someone beyond everything.
Okay, you're saying there's something within the heart, some truthfulness that yes, there is a God. Okay, good try. Something more specific, yes?
I think truthfulness is still valued in society. Although people might not adhere to that principle, they will still value if people follow that principle.
Okay, that's a good point. But people also value cleanliness. People also value the other ones as well. Is there any truth left? Yes.
I don't know that if you are truthful, you can progress or not.
If you are truthful, you can progress. If you are clean, you can also progress. Yes?
Maybe because we want to hear the truth, but we never speak the truth.
But we still have a desire to hear the truth, but we don't speak the truth, okay? These are all good, but still not.
Maybe because we still have religious scriptures who tells us the truth.
Round of applause, very, very good. 10 out of 10. Yes. Society is still held up on truthfulness because still, no matter what degradation has happened in society, there is still something which is existing which can give you the pure absolute truth and the ultimate explanation of who you are, what is the world, what is the goal of life. And what is present to tell you that? Scriptures. So therefore, it's said that Kali Yuga is still resting on truthfulness, because despite the fact that there's so much untruth out there, we still have access to these books, and these books are giving us entrance into the truth. Does that make sense? So therefore, the books are very, very powerful. The books are very, very valuable to us. And the books give us an opportunity to understand very amazing things which help us to find happiness. So today I'm going to read from the books. We're going to read from Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 4, which is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. And we're going to read from text number 2. Yeah, maybe I'll just read it because you don't. There's no board or anything here. So this is the Sanskrit, and then I'll read the English. So Krishna says to Arjun, "Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu sakaleneha mahata yoga nashta parantapa." So the English translation goes like this. The supreme science was thus received through the chain of the cyclic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science, as it is, appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings, because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord Himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore He declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to the authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. The spirit is demonic because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English as it is received by the Parampara disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. Srila Prabhupada ki Om Gyan Atimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadesha Tarine. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki. So, why does this material world exist in the first place? One time a devotee came to Srila Prabhupada and he said, why did Krishna create this material world? Prabhupada said, because you wanted it. So the fact is, we wanted to be separate from Krishna. We wanted to kind of experience what life would be like in a different situation. So Krishna creates the material world. Just like you have a movie on a screen, isn't it? If you think about a movie on a screen, it's basically just three colors, isn't it? What are the three primary colors? Red, blue, and yellow. And from those three colors and pixels in those different three colors and combinations, you have unlimited pictures. So similarly, Krishna has his material energy, tamas, rajas, and sattva, the three gunas or the three modes of nature. And from these three energies, Krishna creates all kinds of planets, all kinds of places, and all kinds of people and living entities, bodies. And then the living entity comes to this world trying to find enjoyment. And then ultimately this world is meant to teach us. It's a school. This world is a big university. If you feel like, yeah, I'm so happy I left school, you know, I finished school years ago, that was like, no, you're still in school, because the whole material world is a school. And therefore, every day we're getting lessons which are reminding us, like, it doesn't feel like this is the right place. Isn't it? Every day you get a reminder, if you're honest, that teaches you, like, I don't think so, I'm in the right place. Because things never go according to my plans, things never go according to my desires. But then, in order to find out where we do need to go, then there has to be a way to get out. So what's the way to get out? Therefore, Krishna says, what I do, evam parampara praptam, from the spiritual world, I descend and I give knowledge. And this knowledge comes down in a line of teachers. The word parampara, it means disciplic succession, but literally it means one after another. Parampara, one after another. So Krishna gives the knowledge, and then someone gives the knowledge to someone else, and like this, through society, the knowledge is coming down. So then we have then access to that knowledge. And if that knowledge we're getting is coming from the original source, then the knowledge is authentic. And that authentic knowledge can then teach you everything you need to know to get out of this place. So therefore, parampara, or the disciplic succession, is very valuable. Because that is like the lifeline, isn't it? Like when someone is drowning in the ocean, you know. If you ever watch like Baywatch or something like that. Maybe you don't watch now, but... You know, so like, yeah, someone's drowning in the ocean, then what do? Boom, they throw out a line. And that line, if they can hang on to it, then they can get out of the ocean. So similarly, the parampara is throwing out a line of knowledge. And if we grab it, and if we take that knowledge deep in our heart, then we can get out. Now, this is a little technical, but it's important for you to understand. I'm going to ask you a question. Have you guys seen this? This is at the end of the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. This is the actual disciplic succession of how knowledge came down. So, who was the first person Krishna gave knowledge to? Lord Brahma, because Brahma is the one that created or engineered the universe. And then Brahma gave it to Narada. Narada is like the wandering sage. He's like the spiritual origin version of like Pied Piper. Do you know what I mean? Pied Piper used to like sing and everyone used to follow him. So Narada, when he was like that, he goes through the universe with his veena, singing and giving knowledge to everyone. And through this line, it comes down, and the 32nd teacher in the line is who? A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So now, in the verse we just read, Krishna says that I gave knowledge at the beginning of time, but then in course of time, the knowledge was lost. So Krishna says, I came back and I taught that knowledge to Arjun so that the succession could be re-established. Agreed? So my question to you is, Arjun's name is not here. Is Arjun's name here? No. So if Krishna gave the knowledge to Arjun to re-establish the disciplic succession, then why is Arjun's name not here? Anyone know?
The parampara starts from Lord Brahma, so before even Arjuna, like at the time of creation, so the line is from the time of creation.
Okay, but Krishna says it got lost at a certain time, and to re-establish it, he had to teach it to Arjun. So Arjun started it again. So then why isn't Arjun in this list? Okay, so this is important to understand. It's a little technical, but it's a useful information for you to know. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, when he wants to teach spiritual knowledge in parampara, there are actually two paramparas. Did you know that? There are two, broadly speaking, two paramparas. One parampara is called the spiritual parampara. This is known in Sanskrit as Shotra. And the other parampara is called the seminal parampara. This is called Shukra. Okay? So what do you think this one is? Do you think this parampara is the spiritual one or the seminal one? This is the spiritual one. Because these personalities are not necessarily related to each other by family, but they are guru and disciple. Krishna is Brahma's guru. Brahma is Narad's guru. Narad is Vyasa's guru. Narad and Vyasa are not blood related, but he's his guru. So this disciplic succession is a spiritual succession. And simultaneously, Krishna gives knowledge in the world through a seminal line. So if the spiritual line begins by Krishna instructing Brahma, how do you think the seminal line, who do you think the first person in the seminal line is who gets knowledge from Krishna? That was a good guess, but no. Because it got Surya. Surya, close, you're close. Yes. Yes, if you look in chapter number 4, text number 1, then, yeah, you're right. I'll explain. Krishna says, I instructed the imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivashvan, and Vivashvan instructed it to Manu. Yes, you're right. But I'll explain. So, in essence, we say the knowledge comes from Vivashvan, but via Manu. Manu is said to be like the father of mankind. Yeah, Manu means the father of mankind. The English word human or man comes from Manu. So, the other way in which knowledge comes in this world is through Manu. So, Krishna teaches Manu, and then Manu has his children, and then he teaches them. They become the rulers of society, and then they teach the next rulers of society, and they teach the next rulers of society. So one way in which knowledge is coming down is through a spiritual line of guru and disciple, and another way spiritual knowledge is coming down is through rulers. Does that make sense? So what Krishna is saying is that when this disciplic succession, the one of rulers, the seminal line, when that one breaks, then who's the next leaders of society that take over after the Kurukshetra battle? Arjuna and the Pandavas. And therefore Krishna instructs them, and then they establish the line of teachings like that. And so the reason why Arjuna doesn't appear here is because Arjuna is not in this succession. Arjuna is in the seminal, the Shokra succession. So basically, this is how knowledge is coming down to us through the guru and disciple chain. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada is very, very important to us because he is delivering. He is the one who is delivering the unchanged absolute truth. The problem with knowledge is that over time, a few things can happen. The first thing is inaccessible. The knowledge can become inaccessible. In other words, it can become lost. But the second problem is that even if knowledge is accessible, it may become inaccurate over time. Have you noticed how sometimes religions change or people insert their own ideas into religion? So the second problem is that knowledge can become inaccurate. But the third problem is that even if knowledge is accessible and it's accurate, the third problem that can come is knowledge can become irrelevant. In other words, if there's not a teacher that can teach you how everything in this book is relevant to your life and answering every single question, you won't be able to benefit from the knowledge. But there's another problem. Even if knowledge is accessible, even if it's accurate, and even if it's made relevant by a teacher, it can also become impractical. Unless a process is given to you by which you can actually awaken and live that knowledge in your life. So now, can you see why Srila Prabhupada and the ancient teachers are so valuable to us? Because the first thing is they make knowledge that's otherwise inaccessible, accessible. How many of you know Sanskrit? No, a bit rusty, huh? Forget rusty, we don't know one word. Like how do we would have no access to it whatsoever. But even if we had access to it, would we be able to accurately understand it? Sometimes even understanding Bhagavad Gita is very, very difficult. Even when we have all the purports, all the explanations, it's still incredibly, very, very difficult to understand. But then even if somehow we understood the philosophy, would we be able to relate it to all the questions and all the doubts and all the things we experience in our life? Making that connection would be very difficult. But even if we were able to do that, would we know how should I live this knowledge in my life in order to awaken love for Krishna? So Srila Prabhupada and the teachers, they give us all of these gifts. And therefore, we offer great, great respect to them because they are delivering the greatest gift. The greatest gift is knowledge, because knowledge changes the way you look at life. See, you can't change basically what happens in the world. Have you noticed? You can't. Sometimes people try to change the people around them. Good luck. Sometimes people try to change the society around them. Good luck. Sometimes we try to change or create some situation by which we can control our fortunes and everything around us. Good luck. You can't control the world. But what you can control is your own vision, how you register those things and how you react to those things and how you respond to the different things that happen in life. And therefore, when you have knowledge, it changes your vision. Someone may say, well, I've been reading the Bhagavad Gita, but I still got problems. I still experience this difficulty. I still experience that obstacle. But we didn't say that. We didn't say that by reading the Bhagavad Gita, you're not going to have any problems anymore. You're not going to have any difficulties, because those things you can't control. But what we did say is that if you read the Bhagavad Gita, it will change your vision. And then it will give you the strength and the wisdom and the spiritual depth to be able to respond to all of those difficulties without becoming bewildered or despondent or distressed. So this is a very, very great gift, and Srila Prabhupada is saying that the world needed this, therefore we created this Bhagavad Gita. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is. No motivation, no personal agenda, simply to help people, simply to reveal the absolute truth. Before I go ahead, does anyone have any questions so far? Anything you'd like me to clarify on anything I've said? Yes.
I wanted to know about the Saptarishis, where do they fall, and or other rishis also, in which sampradaya do they come, or they are they don't defy any sampradaya?
Yeah, so over the ages there are rishis. Yeah, rishi means literally means a great thinker. The Prime Minister of the UK is also a rishi. But he's Rishi Sunak. He's a very nice person. I don't know if he qualifies fully as a rishi, because to be a rishi you have to have studied many things. But rishi literally means a great thinker. So different rishis have grasped different aspects of the absolute truth. And then what those rishis do is they present it for the benefit of humankind. Not every rishi is giving the same evolution of knowledge. So for example, someone like Narada Rishi, Narada Muni. Muni also means great thinker. So he is giving the ultimate conclusion, bhakti. Other rishis, they are giving knowledge of the impersonal understanding of the absolute truth. Other rishis are giving knowledge of different yoga systems, Ashtanga. For example, you have Patanjali Muni. So he's also a rishi. And in the Yoga Sutras, he is giving an understanding of Ashtanga, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. Different steps by which one can actually understand that the Lord is situated within their own heart. So different rishis appear in different places to give people who have different desires a way to connect to the Absolute Truth. So the Vedic tradition is like multi-level spirituality. So there are different places where different types of people can connect. And once they connect, then they have the opportunity to go higher and higher and higher. So some rishis, they are giving Vedic knowledge, but it's very kind of materialistic Vedic knowledge. So some rishis are teaching about this yajna or that ritual, or some rishis are giving some entrance into impersonal understanding. Some rishis are giving entrance into understanding that God is a person, but only limited. And some rishis are giving higher understanding. So different rishis are giving different entrance points for living entities to begin their spiritual journey. And so we respect all the rishis, but we also understand that there's an evolution of thought. Does that make sense?
After Srila Vyasadeva, the entire Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga before Sripad Madhvacharya, so who all were the spiritual masters? Because there is, I don't think, any mention of them. Like after Vyasadeva, again, directly Sripad Madhvacharya comes in Kali Yuga. So
yeah.
There's a big gap.
There's a big gap. So here you see Krishna, Brahma, Narada, and Vyas. Okay? And then you see there's the next one is Madhva, and Madhva appeared in, I think it's 12th century, is something like that anyway, 11th, 12th century, something like that. So what happened in that huge gap of time? Actually, Vyas is said to be a Chiranjiva, you understand? There are certain personalities in the Vedic tradition who are said to survive beyond the dissolution of creation. So there are seven of them. Vyas is one of them. Hanuman is another one of them. Ashvatthama is another one of them. So like that, there are seven. And therefore it's said that in this long period from Vyasadeva to Madhvacharya, it's not that there were not other teachers. There were other teachers. But still, Vyasadeva was considered the main teacher. And he was holding the knowledge till the next major link came. So, although it seems like that's a long period of time, we're understanding that Vyasadeva even continues to exist today. So Vyasadeva is even living now. So in one sense we can say then why are all these, because at a certain point Vyasadeva went to the, you know, other teachers came into prominence like that. But in that period Vyasadeva was said to be the authority like that.
So before Madhvacharya also he remained to continue as an authority.
Yes, of course we know that Vyasadeva, you know, he compiled the Vedic literatures, you know, 5,000 years ago. And then the day that Krishna left the planet was the day Kali Yuga began. And then from that time, he continued to remain an authority in that way.
Remember that there's a story like Sripad Madhvacharya himself goes to Badrikashram.
Yes, they meet. Yeah.
Is that at that point that knowledge comes to him? In that
yes, it said that at that point he was instructed by Vyasadeva, exactly. Yeah. Yes?
Is the other Sampradaya also still intact?
The seminal? Oh, that's a good question, yeah. So actually, the other seminal line is said to be somewhat again compromised now. Because you don't really find the Raja Rishis anymore. Where are they? But if you go to India today, then you can still see that because of the culture of Raja Rishis and the Seminole, still there is semblance of spiritual culture in India. But in India, it's also being lost now. Yeah. Like, because so many influences from different places. So it said that really the only safe place to get spiritual knowledge from now is from the spiritual line. Like, for example, many of you here are from India. So you already see the effect of the seminal line, because for many of them who are born in Indian families, from the day you're born, you already get some spiritual knowledge. You already know many, many things. That's the effects of the seminal line. But was it completely accurate? Was it? They're all shaking their head. But not completely accurate. There's also some many missing things and many misconceptions and many superstitions, yeah, over time, yeah, many, many things which were changed. So, yeah, it's not really existing anymore. Therefore, we try to take knowledge from the spiritual line. But it was still valuable because Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna in that seminal line. And therefore, even though the line is not existing, still that literature exists. And therefore, those in the spiritual line take advantage of the literature and the conversation which came in the seminal line. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
You mentioned about the seminal line. Also, like in India, also we see that they relate to their ancestors. Like, I come from Kashyap Gotra, or this Gotra.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Is that also
yeah.
the seminal line? Or?
Yeah, Gotra literally means family. So there were different sages and different lineages of family gurus. You see, the idea in Vedic culture was that every family would have a guru, like a family guru, a Kula guru is called. And they would refer back to certain sets of teachings, Vedic teachings. And therefore, yeah, even if you go to India today, it's like that. They ask you, like, what is your Gotra? Like that. So Srila Prabhupada said, if they ever ask you what is your Gotra, you tell them Achyuta Gotra. We are in Krishna's family. Now, so yeah, that is also related to that. Yeah. I saw another hand somewhere. Yes.
The king of Rajasthan, in Jaipur. It's
king of Jaipur.
Culture.
Very cultured place, Jaipur.
Yeah, because they are still worshipping Govinda.
Govindaji, yeah. So some places in India you still see that the kings are very spiritual, and still, like, if you go to Jaipur is known as the Pink City. Very, very beautiful place. And there you can see, like, Govinda is the center of all attraction, and even the king's palace is right opposite Govindaji, because it said that the king always wanted to be able to see Govinda, have darshan. But even in a place like that, the king is not having the power that the king had before, and the king is not playing the same role as the king used to play before. Nowadays, even kings, even in places like India, they are more just like figureheads. The real power stays with Narendra Modi or the government of India. So although they may hold the spiritual culture and even practice the spiritual culture, they're not able to perpetuate that culture like they were before, because they don't play that role anymore. Therefore, the only hope is through the spiritual line. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada was trying to establish the Krishna consciousness movement everywhere. Like that. Yes, Guru?
I guess the main difference is just because of the influence of Kali Yuga. So degradation is taking place anyway. That's why the human factor is, degrading
quicker than the scriptures, which are remain pure.
Yeah.
So that's why, even though they have relation to particular gotra, still the consciousness is.
They're not able to, even though they have access to the literature, they don't have the character to be able to.
I guess.
Yeah.
That's maybe the reason again.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, spiritual knowledge also is very, very important to understand that spiritual knowledge is not also just understood according to intellect. It's also understood according to character. So Krishna says, from sattva, all the gates of the body are illumined with knowledge. So when you live a certain lifestyle and when you have a certain type of character, and when you have a certain type of attitude of selfless service, and then you read the scripture, then you'll actually be able to grasp it. Otherwise, if you just try to read it and understand it intellectually, you won't actually understand the mysteries of it. Therefore, Krishna says in the Gita, Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitram Midamutamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukham Kartumavyayam. Then later on, or just before that, Krishna says to Arjuna, Sa evaya maya tedya yoga prokta puratana bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam hyatadutamam. So rahasya is a very interesting word. It literally means confidential. So Krishna says to Arjuna, I'm revealing this confidential knowledge to you. Now someone may say, what do you mean confidential? The Bhagavad Gita is available everywhere. You can get it in a book, you can get it in an e-book, you can get it on the internet, you can get it as an audio book, you can get it anywhere. You Google it and you get it. So in what sense is this knowledge confidential? We've made it freely available. But it's confidential because Krishna says, Bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam hetadutamam. It's confidential because you can only understand it if you become a devotee and friendly towards the Supreme Lord. But if one is not having that, like later on Krishna says, Shraddha vallabhate jnanam tatpara shamyatendriya. If you have faith, then you're able to grasp the knowledge in the deepest way possible. I say, well, I don't want to have faith. Prove it to me first. No, but in anything in life, you have to have faith first. To advance in any area of knowledge, you need faith. How many of you have traveled on a plane? How many of you checked the credentials of the pilot before you stepped on? How could you? You put your life in his hands or her hands before even checking? No, you did it. Because without faith, you can't move forward. So therefore, you need faith, you need devotion, you need service, and then through that kind of character, then you'll be able to understand the knowledge. So therefore, when we come to the Hare Krishna temple, we come to hear the knowledge, but then we also come to do many other things, like render devotional service. We also come to do kirtan. We also come to discuss with the devotees. We do all of these other things which help us to absorb the knowledge. So yeah, thank you for raising that point. It's not just access to knowledge, but it's the character to be able to grasp the knowledge, which can make the difference. Yeah, good point. Anyone else have any questions? No? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The Guru Parampara, I would ask, like, Srila Prabhupada, he's there, it's a long time that he's not there in this earth anymore, so who would be the next person in the Parampara? Or, and...
You! One time, one devotee said, Prabhupada, there are 12 Mahajans, the 12 great personalities, and I think you are the 13th. Prabhupada said, very good, you become the 14th. So the idea is that we were talking about this yesterday, that Srila Prabhupada, he wanted his disciples, his followers, to become teachers. So if one gets the knowledge, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it said, Kiba Vipra Kiba Nyashi Shudrake Ninoi Jai Krishna Tattva Veta Sei Guru Hoi. It doesn't matter who you are. You may be born in this family or that family. You may be born in this gender or that gender. Jai Krishna Tattva Veta. But if you know the truth about Krishna, Sei Guru Hoi, you can become Guru. So anyone who takes the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and understands it, who then lives it in their life and practices it, and then desires to go out in the world to genuinely give that knowledge to others in compassion, they become the Guru. And so there are many who are doing that, either formally or informally, and we should also try to be part of that. No, me? A Guru? I'm not a Guru. I need a Guru. I'm not a Guru. But you are a Guru, because how many people have knowledge in this world? Krishna says, out of many thousands of people in this world, one may endeavor for knowledge, and out of those who have achieved the knowledge, maybe one may know me in truth. So all the individuals in this room are very, very rare, because how many people came this far in their spiritual understanding? So we have a duty to also go out and then share that knowledge with people, because that's really what the world needs. The world needs more knowledge, more light, more spiritual inspiration. And so do it in a very humble way and become a Guru. Thank you. We'll check back with you in 10 years and see how you're doing. Fish. Very good. I'm just looking at the time. I mean, I can carry 6:23. Should I carry on? Because you said 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we still have to do the boga offering.
Okay, so we still got some time?
Have some time, yeah.
Okay, good. Yes, okay.
I have an additional question to your question. So we should become gurus and we should share the knowledge, but still there is a difference, because there are many gurus, but they will not come on the list. So there is still a difference.
There are many gurus, but they don't?
They don't.
Or come on the list of gurus?
No, he means who would represent afterwards.
I don't understand.
Many gurus also within ISKCON.
Okay.
It doesn't mean, I mean.
But they're not on this list?
Would be, yeah.
Oh, the guru.
Afterwards, after Srila Prabhupada, that's
what. Oh, okay. Like, who, like, there are so many, but which is the prominent one? Is that what you're asking? Like,
who would become the next? It's regarding to the previous question. Who would be then?
Actually, the thing to understand, you see this list, right? Okay, so this list, you see like these 32 names. But in every generation, it's not that they were the only teacher. Yeah, there were many teachers. So spiritual teachers is like this. Krishna is here. Krishna teaches Brahma. And then it's not just that Brahma taught Narad. Brahma taught many. But Narad became the prominent one. But there were many. And so from all of them, knowledge was going. So knowledge comes down like a tree, like this. So even Srila Prabhupada, it's not that Srila Prabhupada is the only person teaching Bhagavad Gita in his generation. No, he has his god brothers and contemporaries who have their disciples who will become gurus. So the guru tradition is one which is always expanding. There are more and more gurus as time goes by. So, does that address you?
I guess also maybe meaning that Srila Prabhupada is our acharya.
Yeah.
Meaning in the future.
Will there be another acharya?
Connected, but even disciples of his disciples or later, we are based on the teachings
of Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.
So, meaning maybe in the future, in 1,000 years, or
will there be another?
There will be somebody very, very prominent, but still will be linked
to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, we can never rule that out. You know, it's said that the spiritual teacher is svatantra, is self-evident, self-illuminous. So when someone is a great spiritual teacher, they don't need, it's just, it's very clear to everyone. They don't need to be like rubber stamped, like, yeah, like let's take a vote. Is it Muhammad? Let's take a vote. Like, how many think? Is it him? Maybe. 17 in favor, 12 not. Okay, he passes. No, it's not like that. It will just be very apparent to everyone, will know this teacher is incredible. But even if someone does appear like that, we will always understand that for us, it began from Srila Prabhupada. So no one can ever in that way eclipse Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada's position is very, very unique. Because what Srila Prabhupada did could probably and will never, can never be emulated in that way. I mean, it was just incredible what he did. Right, so one of his disciples, Brahmananda Prabhu, he was once speaking about Srila Prabhupada, and then one person put his hand up in the audience and he said, it seems like the way you talk about Srila Prabhupada, for you Srila Prabhupada is God. And then he said, and then he paused for one moment and he said, no, it's, we don't think Srila Prabhupada is God. And then he said, but nowadays I think Srila Prabhupada is greater than God. Because Srila Prabhupada came to the Lower East Side to save me. And then he began crying. Because Krishna came to the world, but Krishna didn't come to the Lower East Side, New York, the Bowery. Krishna sent his messenger to do that. Of course, the devotee never thinks he's greater than God. But often we worship the devotee as good as God, because we understand without them there's no access. So yes, we'll wait and see. Yes, Prabhu.
Last week in Golokadam you said something about we can retain that knowledge, or like keep alive that knowledge that we receive, and you spoke about writing as in,
yeah,
one way to do that on a regular basis, so that we can actually, you said something about regulating our emotions, and that writing can help us to do that. So that would be something I could do regularly. I really like that. And I wanted to ask you, could you maybe share some of your tricks or experiences on how we can do that on a like moment to moment basis? Because sometimes we are in a situation where we cannot like wait until the evening, and then I do my journaling, then I can sort it out. But how to like regulate emotions in order to choose the right path?
Yeah. Gradually, what a devotee is doing is they're seeing everything through scripture. When they look at the world, they see everything through the lens of Krishna's words. Some people see through their senses and emotions, most people, but the devotees, what they're learning to do is see everything through the scripture. So that means when we're walking through life, when we're experiencing different things, when we're interacting with different people, when we're going through different challenges or difficulties, what the devotee is always doing is constantly they're going back and trying to see that through the eyes of scripture. This is known as Shastra Chakshu or Jnana Chakshu, to see through the eyes of knowledge. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, I was giving examples in Goloka Dham of how everything he was able to connect to Krishna. Once Srila Prabhupada was on Laguna Beach, and the waves were crashing. So as Prabhupada was walking, he just stopped. He put his cane in the ground and he said, "Did you hear that?" So the devotee said, They said, "Oh, Prabhupada, that's the waves." And Prabhupada said, "No, that's the sound of Radharani's heartbeat when she goes to meet Krishna." That was very nice. So, gradually what happens is you'll see something, a verse will come to your mind, or you'll see something and it will remind you of something you heard in a class, or you'll interact with someone, and sometimes people speak to you, even they may be non-devotees, but you can think like, yes, maybe Krishna is speaking to me through this person. In other words, you begin to start seeing Krishna's hands in everything going on around you. And journaling helps very, very much, because when at the end of the day you reflect back, then in those moments where you couldn't see Krishna, maybe later on in the day when you journal, you'll be able to say like, "Oh no, actually Krishna was there and I learned it." And then tomorrow you'll be more equipped to see Krishna because you're consciously trying to see Krishna who's active in your life. So I think it comes with time, and it comes because Krishna is speaking to us every day through different situations. Like once I was driving, I was going to the mechanic, and anyway, my phone went off. Generally you shouldn't really, but it was an important call, so I just lifted it up and I just said like, "I'll call you back." Anyway, then I saw in the back in the mirror the police car. Like, "Oh no." And I thought, okay, maybe he didn't see. And then sure enough, after a couple of minutes, pull over. "Oh no." So then I pulled over, then the policeman came, and then I wind the window down. So then he looked at me. Already he saw the tilak, so it was like, "Who are you?" You know. So then he said, "Okay, step out of the car." And then, you know, if he thought the tilak was bad, then this like 7 foot, you know, in full saffron monk is like, "What?" He's like, "What planet did you land from?" You know. So then he was like, "Okay," but he didn't say anything. So then he said, "Sir, you were using the telephone while driving." I said, "No, I wasn't. He said, "No, we've seen you." I said, no, I wasn't. I was just cancelling the call. He said, "We have photographic evidence." And then he looked at me and he said, "Mr. Monk, the truth shall set you free." I was like, "I'm supposed to be telling you that. I'm the monk here." And I said, "Oh, no, okay. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have picked up the phone, you know." No. And then he said, it's all right. "I like you guys, but don't do it again." So that was nice. The truth shall set you free. So then you begin, yes, through different people, messages are coming. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he was sick, no? And then I think it was Thanksgiving Day. This was like 1965, 66. So there was no doctors available. So somehow they found some doctor. So this doctor turned up. And he was like half drunk. He was just like a real spaced out doctor. But there was no other doctor. So he came to see Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, examined Srila Prabhupada. And then he went to the next room. So Prabhupada was in this room. He was in the next room. And then Prabhupada overheard him speaking to the devotee. So the devotee said to the doctor, like, "What's wrong with him?" And the guy goes, "Oh, there's nothing much wrong with him. He's fine." And then he said, "The old man, he prays too much. He needs to go out and start walking." So Prabhupada heard it. And from the next day, he started doing a morning walk every day. You think like, this is some drunk doctor, you know, like, you can take this guy seriously. But Prabhupada heard Krishna's message through him. So Krishna says in the Gita, "Yomam pasyati sarvatra sarvam cha mai pasyati tasya aham na pranashyami sacha me na pranashyati." For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So we have the ability to see that, yes. Sometimes we think, who am I? I'm a fool. Like, why would Krishna even be involved in my life? But Krishna is involved because he's very kind. And so he's always... So yeah, sorry, that was a little long-winded. But yeah, we try to... And when we reflect back and we realize, oh, Krishna was there, then moving forward, we become more empowered to see. I think that's why journaling is so powerful. For those of you who weren't there, we were in Goloka Dham, and we were encouraging all the devotees to try to journal and write of their experiences every day and try to see how everything they went through in that day is connected to Krishna and how Krishna is behind that. And that becomes very wonderful. So. Thank you. Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, I have heard your lot of lectures. You talked about a lot about three modes of material nature. And from one of your lectures where you mentioned that in the 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita, there are around 100 verses about three modes of material nature. So Maharaj, my question would be, I guess we have a long time to discuss about that. And there, so my question would be, like, can you talk a little bit or say something about this mode of material natures? And for example, for me, I would say still now I feel like I am in the lowest mood. I am still in the mode of ignorance, and is there any way, or should I cultivate something else other than bhakti or other than chanting or service to the Lordship to rise above this mode of
lower modes of nature
to the other levels? So should I cultivate something else, or bhakti is the only way it will gradually, like, uplift myself to the next level?
Yes, so I think in the lecture you're referring to, I actually talk about this, where I say that Krishna gives so much explanation of the three modes so that we can learn how to do everything in our life in the mode of sattva. Okay, sattva or goodness is the highest mode in the material sphere. When you live in sattva, a few things happen. The first thing is your health improves, physical and mental. Second thing that happens is your relationships will improve. Third thing that happens is your character will improve. Fourth thing that will happen is your potential to be successful in whatever you try to do will improve. And the fifth thing is overall you'll feel a greater sense of contentment and happiness. And ultimately sattva will allow you to practice spiritual life much more powerfully. So everyone should try to develop sattva in their life. Even devotional service can be in different modes. Did you know that you can do devotional service in the mode of ignorance? There are people in this world who think that it's a great service to God to blow themselves up and blow up many innocent people in the process. It's like, this is the greatest service to God. That is an example of devotional service in the mode of ignorance. Then there are people who do some service for God but are just thinking, like, what will I get from it? That's devotional service in passion. So, like, we need to perform devotional service in sattva. So how do you develop sattva in your life? Well, it begins with all of your habits. The earlier you rise, yes, the one you didn't want to hear. The earlier you rise, the more you're going to be. Like, just know, as the alarm clock, as you keep hitting snooze, then you're going from, like, goodness, hit the snooze button again, you're getting to passion. And if you still keep hitting the snooze button, by the time you wake up, you're going to be in ignorance. So the first thing, if you want to be in sattva, rise early. Second main thing, if you want to be in sattva, always embrace cleanliness. Cleanliness of environment, cleanliness of habits. Because cleanliness is already, like, if your room is in a mess, then naturally your mind is also going to be in a bit of a mess. So try to a more order. And then those with little kids are given a concession because kids make everything messy. But don't worry, Chinita, I'm not referring to you. And then diet is very important. Because if you eat healthy food, fresh food, food which is, like bringing more clarity to the consciousness, that's going to help you be in sattva. So these are some of the main things. Rise early, clean environment, healthy food. And then start looking at all of your other activities. Did you know that you can drive your car in the mode of ignorance, passion, or goodness? It's possible, right? Did you know that you can parent your children in ignorance, passion, or goodness? Did you know that? Did you know even the way you sit down to eat every day can be in ignorance, passion, or goodness? So everything you do can be in ignorance, passion, or goodness. Did you know the way you study for your exams can be in ignorance, passion, or goodness? So everything we do, then we try to bring sattva in. So yeah, sattva is very important. Because sattva helps you to be conscious. And Srila Prabhupada said, before you can become Krishna conscious, first you have to become conscious. So how do you become conscious? By living in sattva, because sattva clarifies. Passion and ignorance cover. So it means impeded consciousness, covered consciousness. Yeah.
Maharaj, like a continuation to this question, like sometimes it happens that being student or even working person, it happens that we go to bed late at night. So, or even if there are some programs or a temple program, so it takes time, we have experienced this, that it takes time to cleaning and everything, and it becomes for us to go to bed late, and then it happens that the next morning we are not able to wake up, because we go late at night to bed, and then we wake up late, but we need 6 hours sleep at least, otherwise we become sleepy all the time. So like, how do we balance both these things? And like Prabhupada also said that all these devotees should wake up at least by 4 a.m. But then like if we don't obey that instruction, then would that also count as a nama parad, because we would not obey Prabhupada? So would that also become like a nama parad and never reach
so much,
state of chanting then?
And he said, chant and be happy. There's so much complexity. Yeah. Yes, so how do we do it? Here we are in the Hare Krishna temple, and you know, actually today we started early. This is like very early for a Hare Krishna program. Usually like it begins at 8, you know, and then there's, you know, lasagna at 10, and then Krishna Katha at 11, and then bed at 12. And then you have to wake up for Mangalarti, because Srila Prabhupada said, how do we balance it all? Yes, sattva is there, but we also need inspiration. We also need Vaishnav Sangha. We also need time where we come together and worship and inspire each other. And unfortunately, the way the world is now, the only time we can do that is the evening. If only we could do it but during the day we all have different things to do. So then we have to do it in the evening, because that's the only time. So Srila Prabhupada did say, rise early. But Srila Prabhupada did also say, get the inspiration, associate with the devotees, take prasadam together, chant together. So sometimes we have to do that late in night. And Srila Prabhupada did also say, get enough sleep. He said, if you get too much sleep, you become lazy, and if you don't get enough sleep, you become crazy. So Srila Prabhupada said, associate with the devotees and come together for kirtan. He also said, get enough sleep, and he also said, wake up for Mangalarti. So you have to do all of them. How are you going to do it? So it means, okay, some days you may give priority to one over the other. But when we find out, when we find ourselves not waking up in the morning and sleeping over 6 hours, and there was no program the day before, then we can understand it's just the mode of ignorance. But if you went to a late program, then you maybe you can't come for Mangalarti. Or, you know, so like that, you just have to see that in everything you're doing, the sincerity is there. And sometimes you may have to sacrifice one thing for another. Spiritual life is like cooking. And in cooking, you need different ingredients. So Mangalarti is like salt. It's like the most, like, it's important. Like. But it's not that if you have a preparation and only salt, it might not give enough, like. So then you need also other inspiration. You need a bit of chili. A bit of turmeric, a bit of other things. So we need different elements in our spiritual life, and you have to understand how to balance it all. Is that help? Yes.
I would like to know where is the place for emotions and not to be sentimental. Like for me, if you say we shall see everything with the through Shastra, it feels like, okay, I always have to remember we are not the body, we are spirit soul, and the soul never suffers, so... But there are situations when emotions come up, and still how to deal with them, not to be maybe carried away, but also not to be like robots. Oh, we are not the body, we are not the mind, so there is no suffering really in this world, because all the suffering is from the body, from the mind.
Yeah. Shastra, what it's doing is it's helping us to overcome our material emotions. And when we've overcome our material emotions, then we can access our spiritual emotions. So yes, Krishna says to Arjuna, Asochan, Anvasochastvam, Pragyavadams, Jabhashashe, why are you lamenting for the dead? The wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. And then Arjuna said, yeah, I fully understand. But then what happened 10 days later on Kurukshetra? After Arjuna said, I agree, we should not lament for the living nor for the dead, 10 days later, his son Abhimanyu was surrounded by the Kaurava army in the Chakravyuha, and they killed him. And when Arjuna found out that his son was killed, he immediately told Krishna, take my chariot there. And when he saw his son lying down dead on the battlefield, he didn't just say, and the wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. No, he cried. He cried. But then what did he do after grieving? And the very next moment he picked up his bow and he continued fighting. Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki. So spiritual life doesn't mean that we lose our emotion, but it means that we learn to control our material emotions, which often overwhelm us and block us from experiencing real emotion. But spiritual life is full of emotion. I mean, Srila Prabhupada said the last word in love of Godhead is to learn how to cry for Krishna. Prabhupada said that's the last word in love of Godhead is to learn the art of how to cry for Krishna. One of our teachers used to say that we are not opening temples, we are opening crying houses where people can learn the art. But unless you learn how to control your material emotions, you can never really cry for Krishna. All you'll do is you'll come in front of Krishna and you'll cry, but basically you'll be crying about yourself and you'll be crying about your problems and you'll be crying about what's difficult for you. And you'll be crying that life became so full of suffering for you. It's all about me, me, me. So that's not crying for Krishna. That's crying for yourself in front of Krishna. So we don't want to just cry for ourselves in front of Krishna. We want to cry for Krishna. We want to say, Krishna, you're beautiful. You've captured my heart. Knowing you, I've forgotten about everything of this world. and I just want to be with you. But in order to get there, we need to be able to detach ourselves from the temporary emotions which hijack our mind. Are there people you haven't forgiven? Maybe. Are there situations that still, when you remember them, give you pain? Maybe. Are there still things that happened in your life which make you feel angry towards God? Maybe. So while you got all those emotions in your mind, there's no room. But when we learn to see all of those things through Shastra, then we say, oh, that person caused me some suffering. But ultimately, they were the messenger of my karma. And I don't need to hold any bitterness towards them. I need to move on from this. Oh, and that situation happened in my life. It was really difficult. But scripture teaches me that I could learn this from that. Maybe it was a good thing. Let me move on. And then what happens is you begin freeing room in your mind. The goal of life is not to remember all the terrible things that have happened to you. The goal of life is to remember all the beautiful things that Krishna is doing for you every day. But you won't be able to remember it if the mind is hijacked by all the other things. So seeing through the Shastra means being able to control our material emotions so that we can have real spiritual emotion. It's full of emotion. Bhakti means emotion, bhav, but different type of emotion. Yes?
And is it possible that we have emotion in bhakti, for example in kirtan, but it's not really connected with Krishna, it's just...
Yes, our tears are mixed. We cry in a kirtan, we sometimes feel very emotional. But maybe it's not all for Krishna, and maybe it's not all just about me. Most of the time it's mixed. Therefore we say we are Mishra Bhaktas, mixed devotees. Basically we're all a bit mixed. So we're mixed in our emotions, we're mixed in our service, we're mixed in our surrender. One for Krishna, two for me. Two for Krishna, one for me. Always mixed. Everything is mixed. And because it's mixed, Bhagavatam says it doesn't fully satisfy the self. Ahai tuki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. If you want to experience real atma suprasidati, satisfaction of the soul, you need to try and find a type of devotion which is Anya Bhilashita Shunyam, which is not mixed, pure. Become a pure devotee. How can I become a pure devotee? That's the goal of this movement, to become a pure devotee. So yes, sometimes when we cry, we come in front of Krishna and we just feel very bad for ourselves. That's okay. We can do that sometimes as well. At least you're coming to Krishna. Yeah, what can I say? Madhvacharya says, if you add up all of the tears that the conditioned soul has shed for the things of the material world in many lifetimes, it will be enough to fill up oceans. How many tears for so many things of this world? Broken hearts. My sweetheart. So many things we cried for. Now we have to cry for Krishna. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Here's one question about, you said that during the day it's happening so many things, and we should see that this is the hand of Krishna. but sometimes it is Maya. How can we differentiate between what Krishna do for us and what Maya sent for us?
Yeah. But Krishna says, Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena konteya jagat viparivartate. Krishna says, this material nature is working under my direction. When one becomes a devotee, ultimately Krishna's hand is always there. So yes, there may be certain karma or certain obstacles we come across in our life, but for a devotee, we must understand that Krishna is personally involved. So Krishna is always arranging situations for us. So for a devotee, nothing is ever just karma or maya. No. Krishna is always there. And Krishna is always trying to teach us. And even when Krishna is testing us, is to make us grow. Why did your teacher give you an exam at school? Why do teachers give exams? Do you like exams, first of all? No. So why did your teacher give you exams? Why?
Progress.
Progress. But then why doesn't the teacher give you all of the answers during the exam? Because they already gave you the answers before. So Krishna is like that. We're going through problems. First we think, why do these problems come? And then we think, why isn't Krishna giving me all the answers now? But it's like someone coming into the exam hall saying, why is there an exam? And why didn't the teacher just give me all the answers? No. The teacher already gave you the answers before. And the exam is meant to be there for you to pass and go to a higher level. So Krishna is behind everything and he's trying to help us to rise, to grow, to elevate. So we have to see like that. Easy to say for me behind the microphone, and then we go out in the world and very difficult things happen in this world. But we have to try to remind each other that ultimately Krishna is very kind, and even when he sends a test which is very, very hard, that somehow he's sending that test so that we can grow. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you very much. I have two questions, and one is about the exam. What do you do if you continually fail the exam?
What do you do if you keep failing the exam?
Give a personal example. The lesson I haven't learned, although Krishna's giving me these exams, is that I put the self-value, what I think I'm worthy or not, I put this in other people instead of having a relationship with Krishna proper. So I'm always doing this again and again. I think like this person can validate me.
So just in answer to your first point, like what happens if we fail the exam? Yeah, just like if you fail the exam at school, you have to go back and sit it again. So have you noticed in your life how sometimes the same situation keeps happening?
Yes.
I think like, I've been here before. This seems very similar to what I've experienced, or maybe, just maybe, because we haven't learned the lesson, Krishna has to send it again. So that's the first thing, that Krishna keeps sending repeat situations for us to learn the lesson. And yes, we're always looking to surround ourselves with people who validate us. Basically, everyone in the material world is insecure. And therefore, all of us are looking for acceptance, appreciation, acknowledgement, all of us need that. Right? We're very self-conscious. In the morning if you walk and someone just looks at you a little bit funny, immediately you think like, what's wrong? Why did they look at me like that? And it's like, is there a problem? So we're very, very insecure. But actually, we are complete. Om Purnam Adapurnam Idam Purnam Purnam Udhiche Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Krishna is the complete whole, and from the complete whole so many other complete units are emanating. You are a complete unit. But the problem is, we're all complete units, but because we've become disconnected from the complete, we feel incomplete, and therefore we feel insecure, and therefore we need so much validation. Put something up on social media and pray to God that people give you good comments which validate. So we do things which, you know. But the more one becomes connected with Krishna, if you can go to bed at night and say, you know what, Krishna loves me, then that journey of insecurity immediately stops. But until we know that Krishna loves us and we're experiencing that love, there's a vacuum, and then we'll look for so many things in this world. And then we get ego death. You know what ego death means? Because ego means my sense of why I'm worthy. And when we establish our sense of why I'm worthy on temporary things that people glorify us for, then we set ourselves up for ego death. Because at one point, those things will disappear. If you think you're valuable because of your position in society, you know what? One day that position is going to take away from you. If you think I'm worthy because people find me beautiful, at one point that beauty will be taken away from you. So then we suffer all this ego death. So therefore we need to develop the real ego. Jivera Swarupahoy, Krishnera Nitya Das. I'm Krishna's servant and He loves me. And when we're there, then everything else we can deal with.